Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Today in the Charlie Kirk Show, Colonel Douglas McGregor joins the program, and he gives some really smart commentary on how we should think about what's happening in Israel. Matt Gaetz, you know we don't have a speaker. It's easy to forget that. Matt Gaetz, the most hated man in Washington, D.C., joins us. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is someone who I really admire and respect. He is the clearest thinker when it comes to anything foreign policy. He loves America, and he's willing to speak courageously and truthful. It's Colonel Douglas McGregor. Colonel, thank you for taking the time. Colonel, how should America respond, if at all, and how should we think about the massacre that occurred over this weekend in Israel?
Well, we will obviously support and assist the Israelis with what they're trying to do. They've assembled 470,000 troops, a force larger than the United States Army, to deal with Hamas. But our principal concern at this point is for the Israelis to execute this mission without widening the war. We want to contain this. The worst thing that could happen would be for other regional actors to become involved. Now, the attacks were tragic, and they shouldn't surprise anyone, because Gaza is a boiling pot of hatred and anger, all of which is directed at Israel, not necessarily with complete justification. Doesn't matter. That's what you've got in that place. That's an entirely different issue. And we, you know, anyone who watched what happened yesterday is appalled. But emotion must not control our actions. We need to think carefully. And our biggest concern should be to contain this conflict and avoid anything that would widen it.
So, Colonel, are you concerned, or should we be concerned, that some politicians are going to try and have malevolent intentions and capitalize on emotion to get us into a broader regional conflict, for example, with U.S. troops against Iran?
Oh, absolutely. Former Secretary of State Pompeo is on beating the drums for war, arguing for a quote-unquote strike at the heart of the beast. Iran. He's been trying to start a war with Iran for at least a decade or more. That's no surprise. Mike Huckabee, who claims to be a pastor, insists that this is also an attack on the United States, which of course is not true. If we decided to launch a war against all of the various forces attacking our society, we would be at war inside our own country in perpetuity. This is all nonsense. Now, we are in no position to fight a major war. We don't want to fight a major war. We are on the precipice of doing exactly that in Ukraine if we're not careful. The last thing is a major war in the Middle East. It will destroy our economy. It will destroy the global economy. And it will ultimately, in my judgment, result in the destruction of Israel. We don't have the forces available. Our forces are in ruins. We don't have the capability to directly intervene in anything and shape the outcome. And this is the problem. You begin taking actions and you have no idea what the consequences of your actions will be. The notion that we should attack Iran is absurd. Turkey is equally concerned with what's happening. And frankly speaking, Turkey is a much greater power, and it's currently smarting under the experience of having one of their drones shot down by us. So the Turks are looking into this with dangerous eyes, in my judgment. We don't want a wider war. We want Israel to complete the task with Hamas, do so as quickly and as expeditiously as possible, and we don't want this war to widen.
So, Colonel, I'm going to ask you a question here. Something doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Where I've been to Israel many times. It's a fortified country. It is a fortress of a country. I visited Gaza. I remember I went to I visited the Gaza Strip right up to the border. And I remember I went to a coffee shop. And just at the coffee shop, there were over 10 to 15 people, IDF soldiers with, you know, guns just around their backs, just very casually. Colonel, am I right in pursuing the question of there's more to the story here? I find this very hard to believe that Israeli intelligence had no idea on the 50-year anniversary of the Yom Kippur War. Were they double-crossed? Was this a failure of Mossad? Was this them turning an eye, kind of like Golda Meir did 50 years ago, where she decided not to act on intelligence to win support from other nations? What do you think about this?
Well, the quick answer is to say that we don't know all of the facts today any more than in October of 1973, everyone knew all of the facts. So we just don't know the answer to all of your questions. What we can say, though, is this. Enemies have a bad habit of doing what you least expect. And we, Israel, Great Britain, many countries historically have become arrogant in their sense of confidence and overwhelming power. It's always a mistake. And I think what we saw happen with Hamas was something that was undoubtedly building over time. I'm absolutely certain that Iranian and Turkish advisors and trainers inside the Gaza Strip or outside of it in northern Egypt no doubt prepared them for what they did. And remember, this is something the Arabs had never been able to do in the past. You know, the Arabs are very loquacious. They talk about everything. They never shut up, to be blunt. And so it was very easy for the Israelis to track them, to monitor them, and to know what they were going to do. Well, that didn't happen this time. And the Israelis were genuinely surprised. They were surprised by new tactics, new approach, the cohesion, the leadership, the weaponry, everything. Everything came as a surprise. It's, you know, people think this is unusual. It's not unusual historically. We went through something similar during the Battle of the Bulge. And if you go back to Custer and his cavalry force, his biggest concern when he attacked the Sioux was that they would run away, because that's what they'd always done. Instead, he ended up fighting not only the Sioux, but all these tribes that had never united, and he was annihilated. So these kinds of things happen. The Israelis will recover. I would argue they've already begun to do so, and I think they can be successful. But there are other variables here, Charlie. The Egyptians want to send in a humanitarian convoy to relieve suffering in Gaza. Gaza is about 140 square miles. The Israelis don't want that to happen. They want to squeeze the population in Gaza, but this may not be possible. The last thing that Israel wants to do is end up in a fighting war or shooting war with the Egyptians, who have already said they plan to stay neutral. But they do want to provide some medical assistance and support and so forth to the population. And then you have Mr. Erdogan in Turkey, who is meeting with the Secretary General of the United Nations and is also going to meet with President Putin. And he's already talked about, on humanitarian grounds, the impossibility of cutting off electricity and water to Gaza. So the Israelis are in a difficult position. I'm sympathetic to them, as I'm sure everyone is. We want to see them succeed, but they've got to proceed carefully. In the meantime, we should have diplomats in the region working to ensure that this conflict does not spread.
We need
to identify everyone's interest and see what we can do to meet it. Instead of treating everyone as a potential enemy, we need to start looking at people as potential partners in containing this conflict. If we don't do that, if we do what Pompeo and Huckabee and others are saying, then we risk more than just a regional war. If there is an attack on Iran, if Turkey becomes involved, this will not stop. It will spread rapidly. We should expect the Russians And obviously, though distant, the Chinese to back whatever the Russians, the Iranians, and the Turks do. This is a war we don't want to fight. So we need to find a way to prevent it.
Yeah, I mean, and Turkey's part of NATO. You're saying, I mean, this whole NATO project is just such a disgrace to our intelligence and anyone with reason. So a NATO, quote unquote, ally, according to you, is helping Hamas. But I agree 100%, Colonel, that if we are not careful, this will turn into a regional war, which, again, I'm not trying to get people in the panic, but we could get into a world war over this, okay? This thing could get completely and totally out of control because of a massacre that occurred in Israel. And my other fear is that Netanyahu, who is temporarily humiliated, very well might overreact and try to broaden this and extend this beyond what just happened with Hamas. That is a fear of mine, because now we have Hezbollah in Lebanon. And he says, we're going to send a message that will strike for generations to come. That's a little bit unclear what he means. But knowing kind of the history of, let's just say, Mossad's, you know, pursuit of revenge, I hope this thing doesn't turn into an entire Arab versus Israel conflict. Strong Cell is amazing. I got to tell you, the combination of NADH, CoQ10, and collagen is really something. You know, people ask me, they say, Charlie, how do you keep your energy up? How do you just keep on pushing? Look, part of it is diet, nutrition, but I'll be honest, I take supplements really seriously. Fact check me on this. You can say, oh, Charlie, I'm going to fact check you. Type this into your search engine. NADH. Just type it in. What does it tell you? It might tell you that it is the secret to living long, anti-aging properties, more energy. Well, all of that is being proven in more and more clinical trials. NADH is a precursor so that your mitochondria can remain healthy and vibrant. The elites, a lot of billionaires, people with a lot of money, they spend a ton of money on NAD. It's a fact. NAD just might be your secret weapon for more energy. I take NAD every single day. I could tell you that NADH compared with CoQ10, the trials show very, very good things. I know, don't take my word for it. I mean, honestly, my word should be good for something, but fact check me. Look at it. And if you do it over 30 days, you'll see an increase in energy. I wake up better than ever before. NAD can help you potentially, again, fact check me on this, with depression, anxiety, other issues that you might be dealing with. It is nature's gift to you so that you might have extra energy and mental clarity. You guys can use promo code Charlie for 20% off. It's strongcell.com/Charlie. NAD might be nature's secret weapon for you. I love it. I take it every single day. Try it for at least 30 days to see the maximum benefit. And let me know, has NAD helped your life? Strongcell.com/Charlie. Check it out. Strongcell.com/Charlie. Colonel, can you just explain a little bit more? I'm not an expert on this by any means. You're saying that Turkey, a NATO member, was probably involved in an attack on Israel. How is that possible? That's perplexing to me.
Well, it's not involved in a direct attack on Israel any more than we are involved in a direct attack against Russia. Remember, these are proxy operations. But the Turks had a key role in standing up ISIS. Turkish intelligence officers provided all sorts of communication equipment, advanced intelligence, and ultimately the Turks operate as a go-between to sell oil to finance ISIS. They are interested in an agenda in the region that is completely unconnected to anything we want, or for that matter, Israel wants. Now, Israel knows that the Turks are unfriendly. Mr. Erdogan is hostile to the Turks, to Israel and the Israeli state. So they have provided support and assistance and advice. And now, beyond that, have they provided weapons? Now, I think most of the weapons that we're seeing used have come from other sources, certainly from Iran. And there are unconfirmed reports that some of these weapons have actually found their way through the Kosovo arms bazaar from Ukraine into Gaza. I mean, anything is possible in the world today.
Colonel, I want to make sure we have adequate time. Can you tell us about your new organization, Our Country, Our Choice? It's Our Country, Our Choice.
Our Country, Our Choice is a brand new organization. It's designed to essentially unite people across party lines. It was founded by a group of people who said, look, I'm tired of these distinctions between Democrats and Republicans. They're artificial. They're unreal. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Policies never change. And all we have to do to confirm that is to go back over the last 30 years. And so we said, we need a new approach. We need to unite around some key issues. Key issue is end these overseas commitments to warfare. It's got to stop. We can't afford it. It's destroying us financially. $14 trillion were lost just over the last 20 years on these ridiculous interventions. Secondly, we've got to close down the borders. We've got to get control, not just of the southern border, but all of our borders, our coastal waters. We need to restore the rule of law and expel the people who are in our country illegally. We need to get control of who is actually in the country. We don't even know. And we're worried about, you know, what's happening today in the Middle East. We could wake up tomorrow morning with a nuclear accident, an attack on our electrical grid, any numbers of different things executed by people inside the country who were admitted freely without any attempt to vet them.
I want to plug it again. It's ourcountryourchoice.com. Is it fear-mongering to say that there could potentially be sleeper cells in this country that could execute terror and harm on the homeland?
No, it's very real. It's very real. Just as the potential for this conflict in Israel to widen unless we exert some influence in the region to contain it. It's just as bad. So we need to stop focusing on what's happening overseas in the sense that we need to start asking ourselves the key question. What do we gain and what do we lose? When you commit yourself to military action, you need to think about that. We never ask that question. And we need to measure whatever we think we're going to achieve by how much we will lose. And the same thing is true with the border. All of these people that want open borders and think that that's humanitarian need to step back and look at the societal cohesion that's being destroyed, to look at the rise in criminality. I don't know how many crimes or misdemeanors are being committed by various illegals. I have no idea, but I know that the illegal population contains the very elements you're talking about. Some of these are people that work for Hezbollah, Hamas. A lot of people are in this country from other countries simply as foreign agents. They will respond to direction that they get overseas.
Colonel Douglas McGregor, thank you for being so generous with your time. Ourcountryourchoice.com. Thank you so much, Colonel. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop at the pillow. Mike Lindell has created the Giza Dream bed sheets. These sheets look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep, which is crucial for your overall health. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Mike's latest incredible deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you'll receive 50% off the Giza Dream Sheets, marking prices down as low as $29.98, depending on the size. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk, including the MyPillow 2.0 mattress topper, MyPillow kitchen towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, use promo code Kirk, MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. When I say he's the most hated man in D.C., I mean that as a compliment. I mean that as a statement of admiration. It's Matt Gaetz. Matt, welcome to the program. Makes me really appreciate it. Long time no see, Matt. So, Matt, it's been a week. Give us the update. And do you have, I mean, this is a simple question. Do you have any regrets for what you did now that we're a week into this and there is no speaker? Matt Gaetz, the floor is yours.
My only regret is that the pro tem made the decision that was fully vested in him to call for a week of cooling off. I don't think we should be cooling off. I think we should be heating up the agenda, the appropriations process, and specifically turning up the heat on the United States Senate to take up the bills that we have already passed to fund our veterans, to fund our national defense, to fund our Department of Homeland Security and the border. Right now, we could be negotiating those things. The Senate has not passed any of those bills. As far as the speaker's race goes, I'm quite pleased with the candidates that we have. Where this would be a more challenging scenarios if we had 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 candidates, each with a small batch of people, and one could see that reasonably taking some weeks to resolve. But Charlie, we have two candidates, Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan. One of those two people is going to get more support than the other, and that will likely be the person that our conference rallies around. I think highly of both men. I've worked with both of them very closely on committees and on regional priorities. I think that either will represent an upgrade at the position. And when I leave this discussion, we're going to some small group meetings where both Mr. Scalise and Mr. Jordan will lay out their vision on spending. That's something very important to me, because if we get the rest of this right, but we don't resolve the fact that we're facing a $2.2 trillion annual deficit, then I fear that we'll lose this great country.
Everybody, email us your thoughts and your questions you want me to ask Congressman Gates. So we're on Team Jim Jordan all the way. Matt, who are you supporting in the speaker's race?
Well, I'm an undecided voter right now. I've said it's an embarrassment of riches that we've got, you know, someone like a Jim Jordan, who is our most talented, our hardest working member, someone who I personally nominated in January. And Steve Scalise is a guy who's demonstrated a tremendous amount of grit. He's widely respected among every facet of the conference. And I think either of these men would be able to bring us together. Ultimately, that has to be toward a specific vision, though. I think too often in Washington, it's about personality or fundraising or who's done what favor for whom. And so, you know, while I have great personal affection for both of these folks, my final decision is going to be driven by their vision on budgeting and then really reining in this government, because you are rightly critical of Republicans who just put on a big performance in committee, but then at the end of the day, still send the check to operationalize a government that in many instances has been turned against the people. So I think we have to use that power of the purse effectively. And if we do so, we can leverage one half of one third of government. Kevin McCarthy never really understood leverage. I think we've got to see how the plan will work under the upgrades in Scalise or Jordan.
If I were to guess, I think you're going to be more in the Jordan camp than the Scalise camp, but I don't want to speak for you. Matt, let's talk timeline. We're a week into this. When are we going to start to see some votes, not just, you know, heated sessions and the, you know, closed doors and, you know, fist fights that are going to break out? Come on, we got to get a speaker here. We got to raise the $300 million. And is there any, read us into this kind of resurgence where McCarthy's going to make another go at the whole ballgame here? Timeline and McCarthy. Matt Gaetz, respond.
Sure. I suspect that we'll have our first votes on Wednesday morning, tomorrow morning. And if someone has 50% plus one, I think that the conference will very quickly rally around that person, or if it's close to that. So we'll have a secret ballot. We'll determine who won that secret ballot. And I wish it were more action on the floor, like the country got to see during the last speaker contest, where different people could make nominating speeches and you would see publicly how people were voting. I think a majority of our conference is instead going to want to resolve this behind closed doors so as to not have that public display. I actually don't think that made us weaker. I think that made us stronger, because the country tuned into what we were fighting for and who we were fighting for and how we thought we could get from point A to point B. But I'm not in the majority on that question. So it could be as early as Wednesday. I don't think that it'll last into next week. And if there are, you know, 4, 5, 10, or 12 people that will only vote for Kevin McCarthy, even though he's not a candidate and has no path to regain the position, that would be a real sign of stubbornness, not a collective effort to unify and go forward with a plan.
So, Matt, something that I think is getting misrepresented here. Some people say, you know, we want to get an Israel aid package passed quickly, and because of that, we need a speaker. So two different things there. But Matt, whether it be border security or if our country got attacked, the House can still pass legislation without a speaker. You could do a single resolution. You can introduce up or down vote. The speaker pro tem can introduce legislation. So what I'm trying to get at, Matt, is that we shouldn't be overly pressured into conceding our principles because of basically a narrative of misinformation. Is that correct, Matt Gaetz?
I think that's largely right, Charlie. And while we're horrified at what's going on right now in Israel, and we understand that Israel has a right to defend itself and is indeed doing so, the the observations of Marco Rubio are pretty dispositive here. He laid out how under our current laws, there is all of the authority the president of the United States needs to be able to provide any additional supplemental aid to Israel. And keep in mind, Israel is on a $3.8 billion auto pay as the consequence of good legislation that Marco Rubio passed. And so I think that we're fine in terms of meeting the needs at Israel. Of course, we want the border to be more reflective of what the American people want, but we can achieve that objective by demanding the Senate take up and pass our legislation to fund the border with policy demands that people not be just released indiscriminately into the country. They have to be detained or removed if they are not here lawfully. And so that is a really important asylum change that we're fighting for there. But we should not buy into the misinformation that Congress can do nothing. I mean, you know, just today I was getting briefings on what's going on in the Middle East. Tomorrow morning, we've got a classified briefing set for all the members. So work is still being done here. I do think we need to get a speaker quickly, but it is not worth sacrificing our principles.
So there's this whisper campaign that's going on here, Matt. I'm going to read this article here from Politico.com. McCarthy loyalists vow to draw out painful speakership battle. So they actually might want to turn this into a spectacle. As far as the news with Israel, do you think that changes the calculation in that regard? And how will you respond tactically to moderates that now want to exact revenge by basically drawing this out into a long, long process?
Well, if moderates want to help Israel, as I believe they do and as I want to do, that would be very self-defeating to say that just for the sake of eulogizing the whatever's left of Kevin McCarthy, that we want to continue to vote for him in the absence of any belief that he could govern the House of Representatives. What I would say is that Kevin McCarthy has had 9 months to lead the House of Representatives, and we didn't really deliver on anything substantive for the American people. All we did was advance Joe Biden's spending and Nancy Pelosi's policy priorities while underwriting the debt for all of it. We've not even sent a subpoena to Hunter Biden. So we've had a pretty large sample size of the Kevin McCarthy experience. And if there's a small group of moderates who want to just deny the House of Representatives a speaker with no end game, I think their constituents will put pressure on them. I've had every talking head on Fox News and even other conservative media outlets critical of me. And yet the recent CBS poll that came out showed that 60% of Americans and 54% of identified conservatives support the ouster of Kevin McCarthy. Matter of fact, my resolution vacating Kevin McCarthy may be the most popular thing that the House of Representatives has passed that's actually gotten enacted. I mean, it's certainly more popular than the debt limit deal and the continuing resolutions. So I think that we've got an opportunity to come together. We should seize that opportunity, and we should really count our blessings that we've got people like Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise willing to step up and take on this challenge.
Everybody, you can email us your questions here, freedom@charliekirk.com for Matt Gaetz. Here's one question we received from one of our listeners, Matt. They say, Matt, I'm with you 100%. How are you handling all of the vicious attacks? Can you read us into how they are retaliating? Matt, can you add some context to that? Because, you know, you don't aim for the king, take out the king, catch the car, and then go back to your district and expect parades and beautiful commercials, you know, with you and your wife. Has the regime come after you? What can you share?
Yeah, there are some outside dark money groups that are attacking me in my district, and there are threats of retaliation, expulsion, weaponizing the ethics process to try to force me out of the United States Congress. What I can assure the American people is that every day I am here, I will fight for you. And if demanding that we follow the law or pass a budget draws me ire or negative attacks, I am built for the battle. I have faced down tougher things than a few nasty grams from Grover Norquist. So I'm very proud of the work we've done, but I don't believe the job is over. We are still in this fight to ensure that the American people are represented first and foremost in the thoughts and minds of our leadership as we go to battle the Biden administration and the Chuck Schumer-controlled Senate. So, yeah, you know, there have been a few terse words and even terser actions, but it's not something that I let get me down. I'm a pretty happy warrior.
So Matt, in closing here, we know that if this is successful, we need to keep the House. And so talk about what that plan will be. And we also have this continuing resolution that is just coming up. You mentioned this on the horizon. If you guys leave DC again, I'm gonna throw my computer at the wall. I mean, you guys get more vacation, not you. I mean, it's the speaker that decides this. What's the 30-day marching plan? How can the grassroots help you, Matt Gaetz?
Yeah, we need to demand that the United States Senate pass single subject spending bills. We've passed enough single subject spending bills to fund 70% of the government. We've got the remaining to get to, and there are some tough cuts that, you know, we had some Midwestern farmers that weren't real thrilled about. So we've got to work with them. They're our team members and our colleagues, and we've got to get the spending cuts to save the dollar. We've got to get the schedule on track, which I believe we can meet. I mean, when we had the political gun to McCarthy's head, we got 4 single subject spending bills on the floor in a week. So we need productivity like that. I'm with you. We need to get rid of the French work week and embrace the vigor that the challenge before us demands.
Spending cuts to save the dollar. I like that a lot. Matt, you did something that no one in American history has ever done. The regime is going to come barking at you and try to take you out. I could tell you the American grassroots are behind you. I pray that your plan gives us a speaker, Jim Jordan, and we will wait expectantly. Matt, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. When the government used emergency edicts during COVID to restrict the gathering and worship of churches, 3 pastors facing the risk of imprisonment, unlimited fines, and their own churches being ripped apart, took a courageous stand and reopened their doors in the face of a world that chose to comply. The Essential Church is a feature-length documentary that explores the struggle between the church and government throughout history. The story uncovers those who have sacrificed their lives throughout history for what they believe in. Rediscover why the church is essential and how we prove this stand remains true from a scientific, legal, and most importantly, a theological and biblical perspective. This is not your typical movie. It will change your life. You need to see this movie with your family and friends. The Essential Church is streaming today exclusively at salemnow.com. That's Essential Church Movie streaming at salemnow.com. That is salemnow.com. Check out The Essential Church Movie. It's terrific. So go to salemnow.com right now. I have drawn the ire of Adam Kinzinger. That is how you know you're onto something. Adam Kinzinger, he tweets at me. He's like a former member of Congress. This guy spends so much time on Twitter. It's very... People that spend that much time on Twitter have suspicious personal lives. So I want to mention something. I was texting a friend of mine who is an IDF soldier. And I've spent time in Israel. I was treated really well by the people there. And again, I'm not an apologist for the Israeli government. There's plenty of stuff that they do as I just kind of say, that's weird. But, you know, a common talking point is... You know, whenever America goes to war, you know, like Adam Kinzinger wants us to get another way, he's tweeting at me. So why don't you go fight the fight, right? You know what I find to be really just, I got to be perfectly honest, inspiring and admirable. How many Jews are flying back to Israel to go defend their country? I think that's really beautiful. I really do. I got to be perfectly honest with you. When people love their country, I think that's a really great thing. If I was traveling abroad in Japan or London and America got under attack, I would be on the first flight back to America. I would. I'm hearing these reports and it sends chills. I got to be honest. I don't care what your country is. It's a good thing to love your country. You have packed flights of Jews from Miami and New York that want to go into the war zone. They're not asking other people to fight their fight for them. And when they say never again, they mean it. Israel is supposed to be a statement that it's never again. The most deadly day that we have seen for Jews since the Holocaust. Jeremiah 29:7. Demand or seek, badrash, the welfare of the nation that you are in. Because your welfare or shalom or shalem is tied to your nation's welfare. And so I was texting with this guy and he says, you know, I have a pregnant wife. She's very pregnant. And we're flying back to Israel. And I got to say, man, are you sure that's smart? He said, I don't think people that don't. He said, with all due respect, Charlie, I don't think you understand how much we believe in Israel. He said, this is not a joke. He said, this is multi-thousands of years of history. And, you know, when you study the Old Testament, which I believe is the word of God, you see it. I mean, the Jews were in exile nearly permanently. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Joseph, into slavery of Moses. God delivers Moses to his chosen people. Joshua ends up bringing the Jews. Once the older generation died, they complained a lot. And for Jews, they look at this as a survival of their people. They really do. When I see entire plains packed with Jews that want to go back to fight for their homeland, when I see Israelis leaving their cars on the side of the road to go to recruitment centers, that's powerful stuff. That's honestly, that's nationalism at its best. We talk, you know, the bad guys, they always say nationalism is a toxin. No, this is pretty beautiful. I got to be honest. About sacrifice, duty, gratitude to what people prior did for you. This is why Israel is largely a threat, Israel with its current roots, a threat to the Great Reset. And they believe in their country. They want to defend it. How many Americans would leave their cars at the side of the road if we were attacked? It's worth thinking about. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.